Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible in part by a grant from Risk Management Commodities, with offices in Chalmers and Lafayette, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities provides commodities analysis and recommendations for business and agriculture throughout East Central Illinois and Western Indiana. For more information, call 866-837-9027.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report for Tuesday, January 17th, 2006. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with John Hester of L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. In agricultural news, free trade issues dominated the news over the weekend, with Switzerland, Thailand, and South Korea taking center stage. We'll have a number of reports. Also, the latest numbers from USDA's Economic Research Service shows the U.S. ag surplus for 2005 running significantly behind that of 2004. We'll have details of these and other stories shortly. Also, this half hour, we'll have a commentary from the Farm Bureau and some secrets for success from large-scale farmers. It's all on the Tuesday edition of your Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming on AM 580 as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com.
Tuesday afternoon, prices settled like this in Kansas City. March wheat at 375 and a quarter, down 8. March wheat at the Chicago Board of Trade, 328 and three quarters, down 6. May, 338 and three quarters, down 6.5. March corn, 208 and three quarters, down 4.75. May, 218 and a quarter, down 4.75. July, 227 and a quarter, down 4.25. September, 235 and a half, down 3.5. March soybeans, 571 and a quarter, down 5.25. May, 580 and three quarters, down 4.75. July, 589 and three quarters, down 5.25. November, $6.50, down 4.75. March soybean meal, 180.30, down 1.40. March soybean oil, 21.22, down 45. On the Merck, January feeder cattle, 112.27 and a half, down 20. February live cattle, 96.55, up 97 and a half. February lean hogs, 59.47 and a half, up 47 and a half. If you're in the neighborhood in Pontiac, be sure to join us tomorrow night for another one of our free AM 580 Agricultural Outlook panels. We'll be at the Elks Club in Pontiac at 7 p.m. Our analysts for this particular meeting include Mike Zuzolo of Risk Management Commodities, Bill Mayer of Roche Ag Marketing, and Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities. That's at the Elks Club in Pontiac tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. We do indeed hope to see you there. Joining us now for a look at the futures market is John Hester of L&M Commodities. He is in New Market, Indiana. Good afternoon, John.
Afternoon to you, Dave.
Well, it was a day of a lot of red ink at the Chicago Board of Trade. To what do we owe the drops in the prices?
Sure was. First, we have to realize that it was a reasonably low to moderate volume trading day. So basically what that means is it didn't take a lot of trades to force the market one way or another. The wheat was basically weak on slow export pace, and other nations undercutting our U.S. wheat prices was a major factor there. In the corn, funds were liquidating some of their long positions on the funds and taking, you know, cutting losses and running to reduce their long positions. The corn is still suffering from the USDA report last week. Some of the dry areas in Argentina where the corn was under a heavy stress received good rains over the weekend. So all those things added together weighed heavily on the corn market today. In the bean market, basically the same thing as the corn. Good rains fell in Argentina, and that gave the appearance that it would probably add bushels to their very dry bean production area. Possibility of 2 or 3 more percent possibly with this rain. And the rains are forecast in for the southern Brazil for this week. Nothing super heavy, but in the range of 0.3 to 1 inch in some of the drier spots in South America or in Brazil. And exports were not very good today. And the market, the bean market, did try to rally mid-session when the government did confirm that China had bought some soybeans.
Let's go ahead then and look at some particulars, John. Let's start in the wheat market, where we did have a fairly good strong start this morning, but then after wheat tried both the 20 and 100-day moving averages, couldn't push through any of them, and actually ended the day 3.5 cents from the 50-cent moving average. How much technical damage done today?
I think it did considerable amount. I was surprised that wheat was that weak today, and I think probably everybody else was too. And I, a lot of it's profit taking, and I think it'll depend greatly on what happens tomorrow, on tonight and tomorrow's trade. If they can bounce back, the technical damage will be limited. But if the weakness continues, then it'll look quite bad.
If we manage to push through that 50-day moving average, it doesn't appear there's any gaps between now and December 9, 307.
I would, I don't remember. If that's contract lows, that's probably where they got a good chance to go on if they get down through that.
March corn also went under its 50-day moving average today and couldn't hold what was thought to be kind of a stand at 208. How low does that open the market for?
I think that sets up, anywhere from $2 to $2.04, depending on how you look at the chart. That should be good support for now.
And a similar in the December, although it did end above the 50-day moving average at $2.44. December chart's in a little bit better condition than the lead month option.
Yes, I believe so. And, I think it also depends on what the carry, how the market carries through for tomorrow or this evening. If they can muster some strength and put back part of this, the charts won't look nearly as bad tomorrow as they do this evening.
And then the soybean charts, as we look at them today, the NOV harvest month soybeans still trying to fill that gap between December 12th and December 9th, 599, the 608. Although I suppose if we go below 599, there's nothing there between that and 575 and a half.
You're right. Yes, I agree with that. I think they're going to try to make a stand here around the $6 area, though. I mean, if the funds come back in, the funds were major sellers today, and I think, the market holding here and the corn and beans both depends greatly on what the funds and the index funds do in the next couple of days.
Did you call up to Chicago today to find out if index funds are players?
I did call up there, but he did not have that sheet. It didn't come through till after the market closes, and he hadn't gotten it yet.
What about your analysis over on the Merck side today?
Cattle had a very a pretty nice day, up 97.5 cents in the Feb, but nice recovery. I think cattle were higher on spec buying, tied to speculation of higher cash cattle prices and very positive export news. And the hogs, I think the hogs were up on, they were very oversold, and the hogs were up on spec profit taking on the short positions and trying to even their positions up a little better. Back in the cattle, I omitted this. Show lists were down, which gives the producer spurred hopes for higher-priced cattle in the southern plains this week also.
Were you surprised that lean hogs bounced as nicely as they did despite the discount to cash?
Yes, I was. I thought hogs, I really thought the high in hogs was, you know, around $59. I didn't think they could go much higher than that, but prove me wrong.
What advice, analysis do you have for hedgers then today?
I think in the corn and beans, I think, you know, there's a possibility that it can go, corn can go another 8 cents lower without fund intervention, and I think beans can probably go 40, 50 cents lower over a period of time unless the funds come back in and are willing buyers. You know, any strength, I think a guy probably should be rewarding this market with some cash sales and of old crop, and if Novi beans get back above $6 where you can sell beans off combine for $6, a guy probably should reward the market there with a few sales. If $6 is the worst sale you make this fall, that won't be too bad.
Thanks much, John.
Thank you. Talk to you later.
You too. Bye. John Hester of L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. Taking a look at Mike Sola's two-state forecast tonight. In western Illinois, clear to partly cloudy. In eastern Illinois and western Indiana, cloudy with flurries ending, then clearing. In eastern Indiana, cloudy with lingering snow showers and flurries. Lows ranging from 18 to 28 degrees. Then tomorrow, in Illinois, partly sunny. In Indiana, partly to mostly cloudy with snow showers and flurries diminishing through the day. Highs ranging from 30 in northern Indiana to near 50 degrees in southwestern Illinois. In agricultural news, the chairman of the Senate Finance Committee says that when WTO negotiators meet again in the Doha round, a 54-cent per gallon duty on imported fuel ethanol is non-negotiable. Iowa GOP Senator Chuck Grassley says he's passed on that message to the Bush administration. Trade officials from 30 nations plan on meeting at the sidelines of the five-day World Economic Forum Summit in Switzerland. That gets underway on January 29th. Meanwhile, new U.S. Chief Ag Trade Negotiator Richard Crowder announced possible new free trade agreement negotiations last week at the 87th American Farm Bureau Federation annual meeting in Nashville. Barbara Spangler is Wheat Export Trade Education Committee Executive Director. Spangler says the Bush administration is under pressure to decide soon on any new FTA partners if the deals are to have enough time to get through Congress before Presidential Trade Promotion Authority, also known as Fast Track, expires next year.
Trade Promotion Authority expires in July of 2007. After that time, we have to renegotiate with the Congress, and thus they're being very friendly and decide to just give us another extension, but another extension is not built in. So 2007 is a critical date.
The U.S. is considering a free trade agreement with Switzerland. Spangler says the group is concerned with Switzerland's restrictions on biotech wheat and the likelihood of even more restrictive rules if a trade deal is finalized.
At some point, we think the research and development tools will have a biotech wheat, and we don't want to be locked out of markets for unnecessary reasons that have no scientific basis.
Meanwhile, National Association of Wheat Growers CEO Darren Kopach says the scandals surrounding Texas GOP Congressman Tom DeLay and lobbyist Jack Abramoff, as well as Supreme Court confirmation hearings, will likely bog down this session of Congress. According to Kopach, that means those issues will, and these are his words, have a bearing on anything else we try to get done in Washington this year. That includes getting disaster assistance for those farmers hurt by crop disasters in 2005. National Cattlemen Beef Association officials say they cannot support a free trade deal between South Korea and the U.S. until South Korean officials fully open their border to U.S. beef. Jay Truitt is NCBA Vice President of Government Affairs. Truitt says South Korea's exclusion of short ribs severely limits U.S. exports.
It's about $400 million worth of the total market, and frankly, it's kind of the premium product that goes into that marketplace. So between that and limited access for variety meats, we may have lost a good 50% of that marketplace and very well may be kind of the featured items that move in there.
And Truitt says until South Korea allows unrestricted free trade on beef, NCBA will not favor U.S. discussing a free trade deal.
We know that sometime here in the next few days there will probably be an announcement for the beginning or initiation of a free trade agreement to be negotiated between the United States and Korea. And frankly, the National Cattlemen's Beef Association is in no way prepared to be supportive of that process until we get back the access that we already have.
South Korea partially reopened its border to U.S. beef last Friday. The sixth round of negotiations on a free trade deal between the U.S. and Thailand broke off Friday with no agreement and no clear decision to move forward. Barbara Weissel is Assistant U.S. Trade Representative for Southeast Asia. Speaking from Thailand, she told reporters many key issues, including treatment of sensitive ag products like sugar, remained completely unresolved. Weissel says the latest round of talks has the Bush administration considering whether to end negotiations.
Well, I'm going to come back and report on the progress that was made. There were progress in some areas less than we had hoped for in other areas. Our position is that if both sides decided they wanted to redouble their efforts, they could conclude the agreement in the time that we have left. But we have to evaluate whether or not we think that the will is there on both sides.
Among other things, Thai negotiators want a 10-year period to phase out their import tariffs on meats, milk, and corn. USDA figures released last week show U.S. agriculture continues to post a modest trade surplus. Nora Brooks is an economist with USDA's Economic Research Service. She says ag trade data through November shows red meat, soybeans, and cotton exports all contributed to the positive account balance.
Ag exports, the total for the first 11 months was $57.4 billion, and imports was $53.9, which left us with $3.5 billion surplus. The red meat and poultry meat values are up 33 and 23%. Shipments of cotton and soybeans normally go up in October and November as more of the crop is harvested, and cotton export volume was substantially higher in November than October, with China continuing to take the largest share of that.
The U.S. ag trade surplus of $3.4 billion through the first 11 months of 2005 is less than it was through the first 11 months of 2004, when it topped $6.5 billion. Farm Futures magazine says it knows the secrets of large-scale producers. Bryce Knorr is the magazine's senior editor. Knorr says large-scale ag producers have a great head for business.
They had to have excellent business skills, and that includes excellent marketing and financial characteristics. And so they pay a lot of attention to finances and have good accounting systems to make sure they know where all those nickels and dimes are going to.
And according to Knorr, large-scale ag producers really do tend to be dirt-under-the-fingernail farmers.
There's another perception that the typical large farmer spends all day in the office and doesn't really get out there in the tractor. And what we found was that two out of every three of these fellows is really actively engaged in production agriculture. They're not just pushing paper and sharpening their pencil. They're out there combining corn and planting the corn in the spring as well.
What's more, Norris says large-scale farmers typically own other businesses outside of their farm operations.
A particularly popular one is trucking. Of course, that makes sense for many farmers. They need to haul their produce to market, And however, they want to keep those trucks busy, so a lot of fellows have branched out into different types of trucking operations, in some cases construction. Typical, a lot of the these businesses are ag-related businesses, and I guess it all fits into the pattern that to be a very large farmer, you have to be something of an entrepreneur and really, you know, willing to branch out and do some different things.
Norris says the most successful big farms he surveyed tended to be farms in counties with populations of 100,000 people or more. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Agricultural information on AM 580 is made possible with support from Lincoln Land Agri Energy in Palestine, Illinois, producing a renewable fuel with corn bought directly from the farmer. More information at 800-586-2321 or online at LincolnLandAgriEnergy.com.
In today's Listener Opinion Forum, Shelby County Farm Bureau's Amy Roachkiss says when it comes to policy decisions in support of agriculture, 2005 was a very good year.
One must wait until evening to see how splendid the day has been. This proverb is especially close to my heart this time of the year when I find myself looking back through the year at Farm Bureau's public policy accomplishments, as well as its setbacks. As we reflect on 2005, there are many policy successes that stand out in my mind, achievements that all U.S. farmers should be able to smile upon. Though Farm Bureau accomplished many policy priorities this year, one stands out in my mind as a clear-cut win, the Central American Free Trade Agreement. The agreement provides significant opportunities for U.S. agriculture because tariffs on almost all U.S. products exported to Central American Free Trade Agreement nations will decrease to 0% after full implementation. CAFTA benefits agriculture as a whole by providing economic growth and security for all U.S. farmers while expanding our opportunities globally. Passage of the energy bill was another significant victory, with a renewable fuel standard of 7.5 billion gallons by the year 2012, extension of biodiesel tax credits until the end of 2008, and extension of the renewable production tax credit for wind, biomass, and other energy sources, this comprehensive legislation moves our nation toward increased energy independence. Other significant issue milestones include the Supreme Court's decision supporting the beef checkoff, which further strengthens the future of commodity checkoff programs, and House passage of endangered species legislation, which makes significant strides toward improving endangered or threatened species recovering while ensuring landowners are not unfairly burdened. We cannot look at our successes without coming to the realization that we have much more ground to cover. This includes correction of the misuse of eminent domain authority. Farm Bureau will not sit idly by allowing our farms to be seized for private economic development projects. No property is secure. Anyone's farm can go to the highest bidder, and we must eliminate this practice that was allowed by the Supreme Court's Kelo decision. Increasing opportunities for U.S. agriculture through trade and eliminating economic burdens such as the death tax, will undoubtedly continue to be priorities for the Farm Bureau in 2006. Drafting the 2007 Farm Bill also will be a major priority for Farm Bureau this coming year. And until that bill is drafted and approved, Farm Bureau will work to maintain the structure of the current Farm Bill while trying to avoid cuts to agriculture programs. There is a new day dawning, and with the continued involvement of Farm Bureau's grassroots members, I am confident 2006 will be another splendid year. This is Amy Roachkiss with the Shelby County Farm Bureau.
Amy Roachkiss's comments are her own and reflect her opinions. They do not necessarily reflect those of this station. We strongly urge listeners like you to become involved by sharing your views as well. To do so, call us at 217-333-0850.
Carl Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carl Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jim Meadows. House Speaker Dennis Hastert is promoting an ethics proposal today that would ban lawmakers from taking all but the smallest gifts from lobbyists. The Illinois Republican says the measure would bar meals and travel. The proposal would also increase the length of time that a former lawmaker or staffer would have to wait before they could lobby Congress from 1 year to two. A spokesman for Congressman Tim Johnson says his vote for the next House Majority Leader will be affected by which one pledges the reforms that Johnson and other members of his center aisle caucus have called for. Press Secretary Phil Bloomer says Johnson has not yet decided among acting House Majority Leader Roy Blunt of Missouri, John Boehner of Ohio, or Arizona's John Shattuck. 19th District Congressman John Shimkus of Collinsville tells a St. Louis radio station that he's also undecided on whom to vote for. Champaign school board members must make some difficult choices before finalizing a bond referendum to go on the March primary ballot. Some board members in Unit 4 say they want to see changes to the proposal, asking for $64 million for new and renovated school buildings. Others question the locations of proposed new schools, and others say the initiative may be too large to win over voters. The Champaign School Board must agree on referendum language at their meeting tonight if they want to get it on the March 21st ballot. Indiana State Senator Robert Jackman was taken to an Indianapolis hospital this morning because of an unspecified medical condition. Legislative Dr. Heidi Harris says the 62-year-old Milroy Republican has a history of asthma but likely did not suffer an asthma attack. Harris also said Jackman did not show symptoms of heart problems. Two Purdue University graduates who spent 16 hours clinging to the hull of their capsized boat in the Atlantic Ocean are now safe. The Coast Guard says 23-year-old Emily Cole of Plainfield, Illinois, and 22-year-old Sarah Kessens of Salem, Indiana, were picked up by another ship about 1,300 miles east of Puerto Rico on Monday morning. The two had been participating in the 3,000-mile Atlantic rowing race when the accident occurred. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Chip Jorstad in Morris at 815-941-3706. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at agricultural weather is Don Day of Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Good afternoon, Don.
Good afternoon.
Southern Brazil and Paraguay finally in line for some showers?
They are, but the but to this one is that it does look drier. After some initial chances for showers early on, some portions of southern Brazil, Paraguay, as well as Argentina will go back to a drier pattern, although not necessarily a warm one. Temperatures are still expected to be averaging below normal down there.
And weather for Argentina, drier, you say?
Drier. Now, the northern areas and the northeastern growing areas are going to get a little bit of precipitation, but the best moisture will probably stay in southern Brazil.
And I guess then the situation becomes pretty favorable for southern summertime crops in Argentina.
Not bad, although it's been a little bit dry. Soil moisture conditions in some areas are still a little bit behind normal. Not terribly behind, but they could use a little bit of moisture.
What about in Australia? They're going to get wet in eastern Australia?
That trend will continue. Eastern Australia and northern Australia will see temperatures at or below normal and good chances for showers. Only the usual dry areas of Australia will be looking at a warmer, drier pattern. It's been a little bit moist down there in the last couple of weeks, and that trend will continue down under.
And U.S. Midwest, a couple of storms this week, it looks like.
Yeah, a couple more coming. Now, we're still not expecting any severe cold. The Arctic is not going to cut loose with any bitter cold air yet. But the trend will be cooler and definitely more moist. Near, if not above normal precipitations coming to the Midwest and Corn Belt, the Ohio Valley, Great Lakes areas, all areas really east of the Mississippi over the next week to 10 days. There is some hope for some of the drought areas of Oklahoma and Texas the next 7 to 10 days to get some moisture. They got a little bit this weekend, but next week, especially after this upcoming weekend, it may get more favorable for those areas.
What are people saying out your way about the U.S. hard red winter wheat crop?
Well, bring us some moisture. That's about the bottom line to it. It's been not only dry in those Texas and Oklahoma areas, but also across areas of Kansas, Nebraska, eastern Colorado, the Texas Panhandle areas, and up north across the Dakotas. It really has not been very much moisture last 4 to 5 weeks. So everybody hoping for some precipitation, but there hasn't been any severe cold either.
Areas that you're keeping an eye on?
Well, definitely keeping an eye on those drought areas of Texas and Oklahoma, as well as what's going on in South America. Those will be two areas to keep an eye on.
Thanks very much, Don.
Thank you.
Don Day of Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. And Don joins us every Tuesday afternoon here on the Closing Market Report. And that is today's Closing Market Report. Be sure to tune in tomorrow morning at 8:49 for our first in-depth look at the day's markets. And you can listen to today's futures analysis and weather reports on the World Wide Web. Go to WILL.UIUC.EDU, click on AM on the left-hand side of the page, and then Agriculture on the right. This is Dave Dickey.